BFFT. Now, built by High Caliber Millwrights, in for John Canzano, here's Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn with the Bald-Faced Truth.
Sweet 16 Thursday. Welcome into the show here on the Bald-Faced Truth. Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn, in for John Canzano. If you recognize even just part of that voice of the great Gus Johnson, that's one of the top Sweet 16 moments of all time back in 2006. Gonzaga, UCLA, how could we forget? Adam Morrison and the Zags, Jordan Farmar and UCLA, back in Oakland in the regional semifinals out of the West. Back almost 20 years ago. Hard to believe it's been that long. And here we are, Thursday of the Sweet 16. We got a one-hour show for you today here on 750 The Game in the BFT Radio Network. Then we'll join Westwood One's coverage at the top of the hour. Four games today, four games tomorrow. And I'm interested because I got BYU in my Final Four. So I'm trying as much as possible to root on the Cougars all the way through Thursday and Saturday. But to do it, they'll probably have to beat Duke. We'll see. Duke, Arizona tonight is one of the games. BYU, Bama is the first one out of the gate. That tips at about 4:09. Then out in the West region, where Ryan Radke, PJ Carlissimo will have the action in San Francisco, Maryland taking on Florida in a really fun one there. Steven has got Maryland going all the way to the championship and winning it in his bracket. That's his big swing. So I know he'll be all eyes and ears on Derek Queen and the Crab Five taking on the Florida Gators. What a year it's been for Florida. I think we've already forgotten about the Todd Golden nonsense from early in the season. No one remembers. No one even talks about it. And the Florida Gators, still a one seed and still battling. They take on the Terps tonight down in San Francisco. And then Coach Calipari still doing his thing. And he's got the Razorbacks, the lowest seed remaining, the 10th seed. They'll be in action later tonight against Texas Tech, which, by the way, looking at a bunch of past tournaments, you'd be amazed at how often Texas Tech gets to the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight. Like, they are, I mean, obviously they've had a number of coaches in the last few years, and Chris Beard being one of them. When he was coming on the scene, Beard went from Arkansas Little Rock over to Texas Tech, then to Texas, then had everything happen, and then he's here with Ole Miss, which, by the way, Ole Miss still playing. They'll be in action tomorrow in the Sweet 16. But it's amazing how often some of these brands make it this far, and it's a great round. It's a great time of year, really, but it's a great round, the Sweet 16. Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn. Stephen, it's always fun. Like, obviously, the first weekend of Madness is special. The Thursday, Friday, all day, a handful of upsets, though not so much this year. Then you get the second round over the weekend. It's all-day basketball. It's a beautiful thing. But now, you know, it's a tier above. The stakes are higher, and you can start to smell a little bit the team say, hey, maybe we can make a run to the Final Four, and it all starts today.
Yeah, and especially this year, it's all the big boys because, like you said, there haven't been that many upsets. So it's a lot of the blue bloods that are playing today and tomorrow. But you're right. Like, this is, you know, it's kind of like conference championship weekend for the NFL. You know, it may be better than the actual Super Bowl because you get two really good games instead of one potentially good game or not. This, you know, today you're going to get four games, all pretty good games. And then tomorrow you get four pretty good games that are all good games as well. So it's one of those things where it's sad that it's ending, but it's also, you know, we're going to get some good basketball games going on because especially this year with the first round being so bad, I thought, with no upsets. The second round was a lot better. That may be because there weren't many upsets in the first round that better teams are playing off in the second round. But I think this year it is set up to be a good Sweet 16 Elite Eight because of all the good history, all the good talented teams that they have going right now.
Some decent point spreads tonight. Bama's -4.5 on BYU, but that game's a toss-up, really. I mean, if Bama's making their threes, you could see them covering. But BYU is pretty darn feisty on defense, and they can shoot it as well. And that total, that's the crazy part. The total on BYU-Alabama, and Stephen, you mentioned this earlier in the week, 175.5 right now for the total in that game, which is almost 20 points more than Maryland-Florida, over 20 points more than Arizona Duke, and almost 30 points more than Arkansas Texas Tech.
And even more for tomorrow when you're looking at the Purdue-Houston game. It's like 40, 50 points more. And that's how that game is going to be. I mean, that game has potential to be, you know, upper 80s, 90s, something like that. Just back and forth, two really good offensive teams. You do worry about that going forward. Like, can you win six games in a row of playing mediocre to bad defense? But it does provide a lot of excitement. That game to kick it off could be one that goes down to the wire.
That's going to be a lot of fun there. Playing the East region out of Newark, New Jersey this year. So that's where the action starts and then switches to San Francisco later this afternoon. The biggest money lines right now in terms of outright upsets to win would be Arizona and Duke. That's the biggest point spread tonight. Duke -9.5. So that tells you what the country thinks of Cooper Flagg and John Schaar and the Duke Blue Devils. Meanwhile, here comes an Arizona team that didn't mess around at all with Akron, blew them out in a 4-13, got behind early against Oregon up in Seattle in the second round Sunday night, roared back, kind of controlled things, and Oregon almost got back in it late. One possession game with the basketball in the final minute, but Arizona holds on to win that one, Stephen. But earlier in the week, you kind of said that Arizona, you think, is live in this game, and they are plus 400 on the money line, by far with the biggest money line spread of the games tonight with Duke -9.5.
Yeah, I think Arizona is live to win this game. The ACC, it was not very good this season. I do think Duke is good. I'm not saying that they're not a good basketball team because they have a lot of good players. They have the number one overall pick in Cooper Flagg. That is a big difference maker for sure. But I do think that the way that ACC has performed this season, it makes me wonder, like, okay, how much were they actually challenged during the conference season? They didn't play a ranked opponent all season long. And
that blows my mind.
And that's crazy to think in the ACC that that's how it worked. And then you look at Arizona, the way they started the season, they had an incredibly tough non-conference schedule. They actually started the season 4-4. And people were thinking, oh man, is this team going to, you know, mess around and not make the tournament? Well, no, then they go on a huge run and they end up 24-12, get to the Big 12 title game, play Houston in a tough one. I think Arizona, being full of veterans, having a guy like Caleb Love who looked like the best player on the court against Oregon, that's a big thing. He's not going to be afraid of this moment. Now, he could shoot him out of the game as well. He could have one of those games where he's 2-for-15, right, and Arizona's not close, but he also has the ability to be the best player on the court, even better than a Cooper Flagg. And then you look at a guy like Jaden Bradley. He's a transfer from Alabama. He's a really good athlete, really good athletic player that's going to play hard. They got some big guys as well. I think Arizona is live to definitely win this game. It wouldn't shock me if at the end of the day we're saying, yeah, Arizona, look at this, Elite Eight, like they are right in line to get to the Final Four for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. 29 points for Caleb Love in that win over Oregon the other day. This is also an in-season rematch in the Sweet 16 after Arizona and Duke played earlier this year. Now, that was a Duke win, right, when Arizona was not ranked at the time. So that would be one of their unranked wins. Kentucky-Tennessee is the other rematch, and that will be a third edition of that matchup this season, of course, being in the SEC, and that will be part of the games tomorrow. Florida-Maryland, really fun one. I mean, Florida, really good team. All the stuff at the beginning of the year with Todd Golden, I thought that was going to get more attention, Stephen, and it seemed like they did their own internal investigation. No one's really talking about the Todd Golden stuff anymore, and certainly his team's not really worried about it either. They've been playing really good basketball all year.
Yeah, when you start winning, and you're, you know, the number one ranked team and you're in the top five, I think nobody cares in the SEC. And it, you know, the stuff has been kind of dropped a little bit. There has been some resolutions to that situation, so it looks like Todd Gold's going to be fine going forward. Yeah. I think. I mean, I guess.
Oh, they're winning, you know.
Yeah,
so
they're winning ball games, but no, I mean, this game.
Family man.
Right. This game is interesting, and it's interesting from the Maryland point of view because Kevin Willard, their head coach, has not been shy about talking about his future, whether it's at Maryland or not at Maryland.
Yeah.
This whole week, and then they questioned him about it yesterday, and he basically just deflected the question and just started talking about Florida and what they need to do to stop them and win the game. Like, it's been a weird situation for Kevin Willard at Maryland, basically openly saying, look, I need more resources here or I'm leaving. And it's one of those things where you got to the Sweet 16 for the first time in a long time. Like, Maryland hasn't had this important of a game probably since that national championship team, right? And to, back in the early 2000s with Juan Dixon, Steve Blake, Lonnie Baxter, Chris Wilcox.
I mean, just talk to me, man. You just inject it into my veins. Early 2000s March Madness is how Judah grew up. Let's go.
And so it's a weird situation that he's bringing this all up in this spot against a Florida team, which you can't really mess around with. Like they're a really good team. So I am interested to see how this is going down. I will say I have Maryland winning the whole thing. I don't like the Kevin Willard stuff. It's making me not comfortable with the game tonight. But
well, you're saying a coach that normally talks this way doesn't usually win the championship.
Right, like is flirting with the Villanova job and all that kind of stuff. I don't think he's really locked in. But we'll see. I do think Maryland has the best player on the court. NBA-wise, obviously, Walker Clayton on Florida was an All-American, but Derek Queen has the ability to be the best player on the court. And Maryland's starting units is really good.
The Clayton Florida player, I'm seeing Steph Curry comparisons between him and this guy. I read that on The Athletic today, and I'm like, okay.
Let's slow
that down a little bit.
He was at Iona with Patino, and then he transferred over to Florida.
Yeah.
He's a good player.
Didn't go to St. Johnny's.
No, he's a good player for sure. But I like the way Maryland plays. They're very veteran-laden. They have a veteran-laden backcourt, and I think that is very important.
Florida, you mean?
Maryland.
Oh, Maryland's veteran-laden. Oh, yeah. I just think
besides
of Queen. Queen's
their best player, but outside of that, they have a lot of vets that have been there. They've done that. So I do think that's really important.
Well, the way they finished with Colorado State, I mean, this was a great final call, by the way, with Ryan Radke, Westwood 1. But this was the most dramatic part of the opening two rounds.
Gillespie looking to throw it in. Gets it up top to Queen. Dribbling left. Big step down the lane. Runner for the win. Baked it in! He baked it in! He baked it in! And Maryland has won! Maryland is going to the Sweet 16! Derek Queen with a runner left of the lane. Baked it in! And for the first time since 2016, the Maryland Terrapins are going to the Sweet 16!
Can't wait for that one. Then the San Francisco finale tonight is Coach Calipari taking on Texas Tech. Arkansas, the lowest seed remaining, the 10 seed. Texas Tech, a number 3 seed. And I tell you what, man, I mean, is Arkansas just going to use their athleticism to hang in this game? But I feel like if anybody could hang with Arkansas athletically, it'd be a team like Texas Tech, who also shoots really well from beyond the arc, Steven.
Very, very interesting game for sure. What are you expecting in this one?
I mean, I want to fade Calipari as much as I can. This is just one of those guys. It's Coach K for you. It's Calipari for me. And not anything personal, because I think he's pretty funny. I think he's a great character and he's great for the game, but I like it when his teams lose. I always enjoyed watching Kentucky lose. You know, I always think about the who did Memphis play in that title game, and what was it, 08?
Kansas. Chalmers hit the shot, yeah.
One of the best title games out there. Derrick Rose banked in the three, I think, to force the overtime or right before the Chalmers shot. One of the greatest moments in championship game history for me. And I get it. Coach Cal, great recruiter. But, Steven, I enjoy when his teams lose. And I picked them to beat Kansas. I did, because that's how much I thought about Kansas. And I loved the Kansas playing Arkansas in the first round. That was a lot of fun. I'm glad that people set that one up. You called it the Used Car Salesman Bowl. And it was essentially that with Bill Self and John Calipari. But I didn't expect them to win in round two. And they did. They beat Rich Pitino and St. John's, and they got it this far. So part of me is like, well, maybe this is just the team. This is the 10 seed that ends up making its way to the Final Four, because if you get this far with the experience they have and the athleticism they have, and, you know, I only really know like a couple players, like Knox and John L. Davis, I want to say his name is, the FAU transfer, then sure, you've got the experience and you've got the coach, so why not?
It's amazing to think that John Calipari's team in the Sweet 16 is the lowest ranked team left in the tournament. And that's what it is. Now, Arkansas, okay, they are 10 seed, so they are one of
the SEC was so deep this year, as you know.
They are, but it, just to
historically
think
good.
A Calipari coach team is going to be the lowest ranked team. I think Arkansas, you saw what the potential was against St. John's, is that they can be the most athletic team on the court. And that's the way that they're going to have to win this ball game. They have to be the more aggressive team. They have to be the stronger team, the more athletic team. I don't know that they can do that every single night, especially against, you know, a Texas Tech team that wants to be physical with you as well. That's kind of what they want to do. And so I don't know if that is going to work, but DJ Wagner played really well against St. John's in the second round of the tournament. Trayvon Brazil is a really good athlete. This is an intriguing game for me. I do think Texas Tech is really good And I think that they are going to get the win and the cover. So I think Tech's going to get this one. But this is a game that is going to be a lot of fun because I think it is. There's a lot of question marks of, well, is this kind of a two-game stretch where Calipari gets his guys going? Or is this one thing, like you said, they're the 10 seed that makes a run. We're waiting for that underdog to make a run. This is the team.
So my picks, I'm going to go all favorites except I have BYU. I'll take Florida, Duke, Texas Tech, and BYU today. What would you take? And you know, you're staying true to your bracket to a degree with the Maryland pick.
No,
so we get that. But
I'm picking if my life depended on it. This is what I'm doing.
If the life depended on it.
No, I can't do that either. But I'm going to pick I'm going to go with Alabama. I think Bama gets the win. I think Florida beats Maryland. I think Arizona beats Duke. And I think Texas Tech beats Arkansas.
If you want to chime in with your picks, you can at 503-417-7575. You can also tweet us at 750thegame. Opening day in baseball. It's a special thing. It is a very special thing as a baseball lover myself. That's really my first love. I mean, right now, you know, I'm an NFL fan and college football fan primarily, but when I was a kid growing up, it was all baseball all the time. Baseball history, baseball books, listening to, you know, the life of Ernie Harwell on CD when I was a kid growing up. Like, that's how I grew up. And then I played the game through high school, and I wasn't good enough to play college, but then I wanted to be a baseball broadcaster. I wanted to be a baseball play-by-play. And that's, by the way, that's an incredibly tough industry to get into and work your way up the ranks. But I did a couple years out with the Pickles out in Southeast, which was a lot of fun, but that was a few years ago now. And thinking about baseball to Portland and the appetite here and the history that we were talking about yesterday a little bit, Stephen, you and I, we were talking Portland Rockies. We were talking the sweet logo that they had, the Rose and Mount Hood and the P and the R and the purple and black is so. And that's just one part of it, you know, to say nothing of the Portland Beavers, to say nothing of what Oregon State and Oregon have done. And OSU just came out to Hillsboro a couple of nights ago to take on Washington, to say what the Hops have done in the last few years and built the community out there. And now they're building a new ballpark because guess what? We ponied up because we're a good baseball market. That's how that works. And underneath all of that is the Portland Mavericks stuff from way back in the day and the Battered Bastards of Baseball, which is like one of my favorite documentaries ever. And all the stuff with who am I thinking of? I was going to say Bing Crosby. I think I mean Bing Russell, Kurt Russell's dad, Bing Russell, and all the influence. And every time I drive down that way, if I'm going to like the Adidas employee store or something like that, down past Vaughn Street, and I think about that. I think about the ballpark on Vaughn Street, and I think about all the history here. And now what Craig Cheek and Mike Barrett and everybody are doing with the Portland Diamond Project, and it's impossible for me not to get excited about the potential of Major League Baseball in my city. And on opening day, it's time to be romantic. If there's any day to be romantic about baseball, it's a day like today. It's a little rainy, I get it, but guess what? You see the renderings. There'd be a roof that we could deploy. And I tell you what, man, I just get outside and I feel like as baseball season approaches, it's almost hard to wrap your head around what Major League Baseball would look like in Portland because we haven't had it. But one can dream, right? And if you build it, they will come.
You would hope so. I think you're right. I think that they would. I do think that Portland is a market that supports their teams. We've seen that with the Blazers, how they've been down. People don't trust their ownership. People don't trust their general manager. They don't trust anything, but they still show out. And now that they're having even somewhat of a decent season, I mean, they're not going to make the playoffs, but they've been better than thought. The fans are going out and supporting again. And it's fun to watch. And we see that with the Timbers and the Thorns with all the stuff that has happened, you know, with their ownership and stuff like that. It doesn't matter. Like, those places are loaded and sold out every single night. Those two teams have a game, have a match between, you know, Timbers, Thorns. It's loaded. And so I do think in baseball it'd be the same exact thing. People would show up, people would support that thing, and they would love it. And you've proven in the past, whether it is the Beavers or the Rockies or you know, the Hillsboro Hops, like you said, even the Pickles. The Pickles have a great environment if you ever go watch a game.
It's
there.
Awesome, yeah.
Just go look up some highlights of the when they won the championship. The place was the place was insane. I don't know that it would get that raunchy going forward with a Portland Major League team, but there'd be support everywhere. And I think it would work. And I feel like today, like you said, is a day where you can think, okay, you know what? This would be really cool. Now, I know that there's going to be a lot of hurdles in the way. And it does make me think, okay, I'm trying not to get too excited because I've got the rug pulled out on you so many times, even back in the day when the Expos were moving and you know, my dad had the bumper sticker of bring the Expos to Portland. All this stuff.
Does he still have that? We got to get that.
I don't know that he still has that.
We've got to find that bumper sticker.
He had it on the car. Like, he actually was driving around, you know, supporting it and having that in the car. So
nice.
I don't think he has that anymore since we don't have that car anymore. But
we got to get a Portland Rockies, you know, hat slash shirt. And then we need to bring the Expos to Portland bumper sticker.
I feel like Portland is such an underused market when it comes to professional sports leagues.
No doubt.
We support it. And that's why it's, you know, I'm glad the WNBA is coming to Portland. Like, that's going to be really well received.
Yeah.
I think baseball would be the same exact thing. Like, people would receive it day in and day out, they'd be out there in the ballpark.
Well, and there have been great players to come out of our region. And, of course, Oregon State, a big reason for that. Adley Rutschman already homered today.
Twice?
Did he really?
He just hit another one, yeah.
Wow. That's insane.
I'm pushing the MVP campaign already.
We got to. Yesterday, we had T.J. Mathewson on the show, and he was, you know, explaining why Cal Raleigh is the best catcher in baseball, which I get, and there's some, like, the great power stats.
I think Adley was listening. Adley's like, you know what,
bro? Adley's like, what are you talking about, man? I'm from there. Watch me homer twice on opening day. We'll get to some great sound from opening day and elsewhere in the world of sports on our one-hour edition leading you to Sweet 16 coverage from Westwood One here on 750 The Game. Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn, right here on the Bald-Faced Truth.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Welcome back to the show, Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn. Opening day in baseball, and it's always a great time to get romantic about the game. And often it's from childhood. If you grew up around the game, playing the game, watching the game, probably listening to it on the radio, it just lodges into a different place in your sports heart than really anything else. And that's what makes opening day special. Now, I'd like to see Major League Baseball capitalize on that opening day interest and keep growing the game and keep popularizing the game as best as it knows how. The last couple of years, it's done a decent job. I think the pitch clock's been good. The wider bases have been good. Your World Series last year, yeah, it was kind of two evil empires, but it was good. A lot of people watched, and it delivered on a lot of levels. So this year, I'm interested to see, you know, how baseball does in being able to continue to capture and hold new audience. And, you know, its media rights is coming up, too. And ESPN, interestingly enough, seems to be cooling off on the baseball, you know, broadcast partnership. And what does that mean? What room does that leave for other media players is something to keep an eye on as well. But let's get caught up with some of the best sound from all around in the world of sports, starting with baseball's opening day. Bunch of audio.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
This is unbelievable to me, Steven. This is one of the craziest stories that baseball has. Tyler O'Neill. I think he's playing on his third, maybe fourth team in the last 6 years. But entering today, he had homered on opening day. Not once, not twice, not three times, not four times. 5 years in a row. And everybody's talking about it. He signs in the offseason with the Orioles. They open opening day in Toronto. Tyler O'Neill comes to the plate, and this happens.
O'Neill drives one the other way. That's headed out toward right field. He's done it again! The unstoppable opening day machine! Tyler O'Neill has homered for a sixth consecutive year on opening day!
Orioles lead the Blue Jays 12-2 right now. And as mentioned, Adley Rutschman also getting in on the fun.
But he has done it in spring training, so we'll see where he is.
A high towering drive to right. That's where he is. He's in the bullpen. In fact, he's in the bleachers. Adley Rutschman, his first at-bat of the season. A towering Toronto home run. What a start to 2025.
Now that's how I want to see the party get started. Adley Rutschman goes yard ball in his first at bat of 2025. Yeah, I'd say he's back.
Let's go. Love Adley. Both sides of the plate from the catching spot. Two homers today, and Tyler O'Neill homers for a sixth consecutive opening day, Steven. That's just crazy stuff.
It's insane. Yeah, and if I'm a team, like, I'm looking to sign Tyler O'Neill every year. Like, you're going to get production game one. You may get a win, you know, and then after that, you know, maybe bench him or, like, whatever, but I feel like you're at least going to get production game one, and it's going to get your fans excited. It is insane that a guy has done that for six straight seasons, just the anomaly that is. And it's Tyler O'Neill. Like, you know, if it was Aaron Judge, maybe that's one thing. You know, Shohei Ohtani, one of the big sluggers. Like, Tyler O'Neill is really strong. He hits bombs, but he's not a guy that you expect to go home run 6 years in a row. So pretty awesome stuff, but cool to see Adley hit a home run in his first at bat, hit another one later in the game. Orioles dominating the Blue Jays. Orioles, man, they're great. It's so much young talent, and Adley is the leader of that squad, man. It'll be fun to watch that team going
forward. It's going to be a lot of fun. Tyler O'Neill, he was with my Cardinals for a few years as well. He's a Canada native, too. He's from British Columbia, so he homers today in Toronto in his native country and helps the Orioles just dominate the Blue Jays here on opening day. LeBron and the Lakers in Indianapolis last night, and all the talk around LeBron and his disrespect for past eras, saying Giannis could go for 250 points in a game back in the 70s, and to top it all off, he gets a game winner.
They didn't see him. Here he is down court. Luka with two for the win. Tipped up and in on the count. LeBron James at the buzzer. Says rack it up.
Crazy day for LeBron, Steven. It just makes sense that he would have a tip-in buzzer beater to help the Lakers win.
Yeah, LeBron promoting his new podcast at 11 with Steve Nash yesterday. I'm already annoyed with it. Just annoyed with him. Just, I don't know, man.
You don't want anybody to teach you anything about basketball.
No, I do. LeBron just rubbed me the wrong way. And the whole interview that he did with Pat McAfee for an hour just rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah.
And now him and Stephen A. Smith have been arguing back and forth. I couldn't care less about their argument. Stephen A., I get it, is yelling and complaining and is all the debate stuff. I don't like the way that they do their business at ESPN with that kind of stuff. And I don't like the way LeBron does it as well. So both these guys, just not great. But I will say, important win for the Lakers. They have lost, I believe, four in a row going into that game and been struggling a little bit after their kind of honeymoon period they had with Luka. The defense had been terrible. They kind of needed a win. So big win for them in Indiana, who's been playing well as all.
You know,
as well.
So let me get this right. LeBron has missed a couple of weeks with the groin or something like that.
Yes.
He debuts this new podcast, he goes on McAfee, and he comes back all at the same time? You're telling me that's coincidental?
Nothing with LeBron is coincidental.
Exactly. Exactly. Adam Silver was speaking today. Some headlines around this, and he's talking about the NBA All-Star problems.
Of course, took note of the great success the NHL had with their national team competition as their All-Star festivities. I'm looking back at my friend Andreas. I wish you were still sitting here for this, but people floated, you know, USA World. I'm not sure that makes sense with the level of development, if that's fair to lump all the other countries together these days. Maybe that we can single out there are some different national teams that can compete. But I think at the height of this, I mean, it goes back to one of the earlier questions. We sell competition, and I think that our players recognize they're not putting their best foot forward when that there's a sense that they're, you know, not all in on playing an All-Star game. And I take responsibilities too, because we're both a sport and an entertainment brand. And we recalibrated for this year's All-Star game in San Francisco around more of an entertainment product, and don't think it worked. The breaks were too long, and I get it. You know, it was an opportunity to celebrate TNT as they were going to have their last All-Star game. So it was well-intentioned, but I think the long stoppage in play, for example, in that final game didn't work for anyone. So we're a bit back to the drawing board.
Okay. We did the All-Star format because we were giving it as a nod to TNT. Meanwhile, TNT and the NBA are at each other's throats over the media rights deal that they did. It's just all backwards. For someone as smart as Adam Silver is, and for how much respect I had historically for him as a commissioner, They can't get this right, Steven. They cannot get the All-Star thing right, and I don't know that they ever will.
No, I don't think they will. I don't know, but it's not Adam Silver. I think it's any NBA commissioner, because I don't think the players want to play in it. And that's fine if you don't want to play in it, but let's not pretend like...
You can't find a way to get them to want to play in it?
No.
It's impossible?
Impossible. It's a status symbol with the NBA. There's a lot of egos in the NBA.
Well, then let's throw out All-Star games for anything Hall of Fame related. Like, honestly, get them off basketball reference. Like, get out of here with this. If you're not going to take it seriously, why should we take
seriously
when you get it there?
No.
And it's not, it's what, halfway through the season? It's a joke.
It is.
I mean, obviously, baseball's in the same thing, but at least those guys show up and want to be there because guess what? There's pomp and circumstance and history and everything that comes with it. And these guys in the NBA, they could give a rat's ass about it.
They really could. And the, you know, the famous story of Rashid telling the coaches not to vote him in the All-Star game because he wanted a break. And he still got in the All-Star game. Like, there's so much money involved. People are still wanting to watch it, and people are still wanting to go to it. But any casual NBA fan does not care about the All-Star game. It's like the real junkies and the media and the kids. Like, my kids enjoyed it. My kids liked the Mr. Beast segment that they did with Damian Lillard because they watch YouTube and they like Mr. Beast. I don't care about it. So I think Adam Silver has to find the fine line of, look, we're embracing technology and the youth and YouTube and all that, the streaming stuff, all that, while also, you know, trying to go with the actual NBA fans that want to watch, you know, that like watching the NBA for actual basketball and not just for the highlights and the dunks.
SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey offers some thoughts on the transfer portal.
There needs to be an orderly process. So when you watch coaches move, it's a pretty tight time frame. There are anomalies to that. And I think we need to tighten up the time frame. Don't forget, like 3 or 4 years ago, the transfer portal was open 365 days a year. It's been narrowed. It's been moved back a week. Plenty of opining that we shouldn't have the transfer portal open during the NCAA tournament. I'll give you that. But I also know there's a lot of backroom conversations that take place. And at least right now with the portal open, everything's on the table. If somebody's looking to leave, they go in the portal and it's known and people can deal with that. It makes it busy for 16 teams. And I'm empathetic there, but we ought to just think contextually about what happens big picture in the game.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is kind of similar to the All-Star game conversation with the NBA. You guys can't figure it out. The amount of smart people with big degrees and law degrees that have gone and done high academia can't figure out some way to keep Sweet 16, Elite 8, Final Four teams happy while also maintaining some degree, just a whiff of integrity as it relates to the transfer portal. I mean,
no,
honestly.
There's too much money involved. Too much money involved. So,
well, I understand the backroom conversations, but just move it back a couple of weeks, honestly.
But that wouldn't help the SEC. That doesn't help Greg Sankey. Like, Sankey's in it for himself and for his conference.
How does this help the SEC?
I don't know, Judah, but Sankey has never done anything to help anybody besides the SEC.
And that's his job.
And that's his job. I don't blame him. But, like, so, like, to hear him talk about, like, yeah, you know, this is great. Well, you know, the SEC had to deal with it with the coaches. Cool. Like, coaches leaving and players leaving are two different things. I understand at the end of the day, both people are leaving from where they were. But also these coaches, a lot of them have worked their entire lives to get to where they are and weren't just given millions of dollars to come to your school after high school and then leave after 1 year. Like, it's a little different when you've been coaching for your whole life. You get to that point, yet you left, okay, because you're bettering yourself. College players do the same. They're bettering themselves, but they also just did it after a couple years. I think it's completely different, and I don't mind people leaving. There has to be some either cap on it where you can only leave a few different times. There has to be a different deadline. They can't have it during the Sweet 16. This is putting too much pressure on all these coaches. It's just...
Even make it next week.
Right.
If
do
you
it,
had to.
Do it literally the Tuesday.
So it's affecting the Final Four teams, maybe.
The Tuesday after the national championship.
Or that. That would be the best.
Like, it doesn't matter. I feel like there's obvious ways to change it, and... When I hear commissioners talk about it, it's never going to be in my right mind because I always think that they're trying to help themselves out.
Yeah.
And that's all they care about, which is fine. That's a joke.
Well, that's why we need a czar of some kind, a college basketball
How much are they paying?
Leader.
I'll do it.
Exactly. You would be able to get more done. Brock Purdy, how often can you see your receiver down the field, Brock, in the 49er offense?
I mean, so my quarterback coach, Brian Greasy, last couple of years, he and I talked about that. He played 11 years. His dad's Bob Greasy. But we got talking about how really it's 60-40. You can see about 60% of the time, and the other 40% you really can't. I mean, it doesn't matter how big you are.
Right.
I mean, I'm already shorter in stature, yes, but He goes, that's why it's so important when it comes down to knowing coverages, knowing scheme, where our players are supposed to be, how many steps they're breaking, and where the ball should be over a certain backer. Like, all those things, man, it matters. And that's why, like, guys, you know, if you go to a combine and all those things, you're just throwing on air, and, yeah, you look all good with a strong arm and fast right. jump and all that stuff. But when it comes down to 11 on 11 and you got guys that are a foot taller than you and you can't see, it comes down to the processing.
Pretty interesting stuff. And I think, you know, that will get more headlines. I can only see more my receiver about 40% of the time. This is more common than you'd think for NFL quarterbacks of every height and every stature in terms of feeling open windows rather than seeing them, throwing guys open rather than throwing to open guys. But it is interesting with Brock Purdy, especially, Steven, amid this conversation of what kind of extension will he get with the 49ers and for how much, that he's opening up on, yeah, I can only see my guy 40% of the time.
Right, and being a shorter guy in stature, like Brock Purdy, what, 6'1", maybe? 6'2", at the most? Like,
feels generous, but yeah, 6'1", I'd say.
I mean, that's
maybe
why he fell to the very last pick in the NFL draft. He didn't have all the combine measurables, and I think it is interesting to hear him say that, and it makes it say, okay, well, how are you going to perform this year now without Deebo Samuel? He even mentioned Deebo in that answer
right.
later on. So, like, it's like, you know what?
Who was that with, by the way? Do you know?
I don't know. Some guy with a cool beard, though.
Okay.
But is it just the talent around you that's getting open, making these plays? Is it, like, I think there is a question that you can ask yourself. Like, is Brock Purdy the guy? He's going to be the guy in San Francisco. But how good is he really? Like, what is he bringing to him? I know you're not the biggest Purdy guy. I feel like this is a big year for him because he's going to get the money at some point. Like, it's a given, but you're also running out of guys on your team. You know, they had to get rid of Deebo. Ayuk's going to be out for a little bit. So more of it is going to be on Brock Purdy than it is on the talent around him. That's why the 49ers are so good, is because they were loaded everywhere. They've lost a lot of that depth because they've had to pay all these guys, and they'll have to pay Brock Purdy pretty soon. So they had to get rid of those contracts.
Need Christian McCaffrey to stay healthy for majority, if not all the season, so you get that run game to build off of. They became much more of a drop-back team last year than they ever have previously, and I think it showed. And then for Brock himself, like, they got to get an extension done. I'd be really surprised if it's not done before the draft. The longer it goes, the more I'm kind of side-eyeing it and be like, what did they even think of this guy? Like, do they want to have him around long-term or not? Or do they want to let him play out this on the seventh round draft pick money?
Don't you see it?
And
don't
then
you
franchise
think, like,
tag
though,
him? I mean, is that the game they want to play with this guy?
Don't you think if anybody would do it, it's Kyle Shanahan. Like, he thinks he could just take any quarterback.
Well, yeah, and as you probably remember, they signed Mac Jones. And by the way, when was the draft that they took Trey Lance?
That was the rumors. They wanted Mac Jones, wasn't it?
It was the hot and heavy rumor. And the reports out of that is that the room was split, Mac Jones or Trey right. Lance.
So, like, would it be?
They make the big swing with Trey Lance. Mac goes, what, to pick 15 with New England or something
so
like that?
So if Purdy struggles, is it shocking to be like, Mac Jones?
It can't
49ers
be.
Future quarterback.
No, it can't be shocking because you know that they probably still believe in the guy. And, yeah, Kyle thinks he could do anything with anybody. They also have a Kubiak at offensive coordinator now. Obviously, it's a Shanahan offense, but Shanahan and Kubiak are two branches of a very similar tree. So you got a Kubiak running offense in Seattle and one as an OC in San Francisco. By the way, Brian Greasy, who Purdy mentioned, he's no longer in football. He needed time away, so he stepped away from the 49ers in the offseason. So they're going Mick Lombardi at QB coach and Clay Kubiak at offensive coordinator, Kyle running the show, and they still haven't paid Brock yet. So I've got my eye on the 49ers. I still have got my questions about them, even though defensively I think they're in for another major step back as long as they stay healthy, because they got Robert Saleh. That's a great D coordinator for them. And they got Brandon Staley helping things out too, which I still like Brandon Staley, even though it didn't work as a head coach. So got my eye on the 49ers, that's for sure. All right, our big splash is coming up next. It's Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn on the Bald-Faced Truth, 750 The Game, BFT Radio Network. Sweet 16 from Westwood One, coverage starting at 4 o'clock right here on The Game.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
I think Maryland's playing really well. Florida's been one of the hottest teams in the country. I think Maryland's going to give them all they ask for. Texas Tech, Should be the favorite against Arkansas, but I mean, when you're on a run where you beat Kansas and St. John's, a couple of Hall of Fame national championship coaches like John Calipari, who's won himself, has done, I'm hoping they can also make it another good game for us.
Sweet 16 tonight, P.J. Carlesimo will be part of the calls from Westwood One down in San Francisco, and we talked to him on Tuesday here on the show. And he said these two games that he gets should be good games. Maryland, Florida, part of it. Arkansas, Texas Tech, part of it as well. The first one will be BYU taking on, Bama. BYU, Bama. And then the Duke-Arizona game will be sandwiched in between there as well. Thursday game, Stephen, better than the Friday games, at least on paper.
Yeah, I do think the Thursday games is the elite day compared to Friday. But usually when that happens, then the Friday games probably all come down to the final buzzer and final possession. But yeah, I mean, the games today, BYU, Alabama, Maryland, Florida, Arizona, Duke, Arkansas, Texas Tech, I think those are four really good games that I would not be surprised if we see an upset or two with these games coming tonight.
Now, look, the Sweet 16 is a special round. I mean, it kicks off 4 days of trying to punch four tickets ultimately to the Final Four. I pulled some of the audio from my favorite recent Sweet 16 memories, including 2017. You'll remember this one, Stephen, when Florida took on Wisconsin in the Sweet 16. Here's how it finished on CBS.
4 seconds to go in the first overtime. And the Badgers lead by two. And
Trice is playing the safety position. He just closed.
Chioza. Oh my goodness!
Showalter first. Chioza second with the same type of shot.
Yeah, but exactly the same.
With the Florida, look at this. Clearly behind the line. You can't make this stuff up.
I don't think I've seen a game-winning three quite like that, when he's running the length of the floor, essentially, two-foot stop, leans in, jumps basically to the free throw line, and like floats it up and in for three for the win, Steven. That was a crazy one.
Yeah, and that was the game where Showalter in Wisconsin then looked at Aaron Rodgers and gave him the belt, the discount double check.
That's right.
Back in the day with Allstate, and Rodgers out there celebrating Wisconsin, just had great times there.
How about 2022, the Peacocks of St. Peter's in Purdue?
They are riding a Cinderella wave. 67-64, 4 seconds left.
You don't like the foul, remember?
Ivy for the tie! Off the rim, and it's over! This miracle run continues for St. Peter's!
Now, yeah, this year's a chalkier, Stephen, but every once in a while, actually once, you'll get a 15 seed winning in the Sweet 16 like we got with St. Peter's. And I think we had with Oral Roberts as well back in 2021. There was a stretch there where the 15 seeds were making some semi-deep runs.
Yeah, St. Peter's, you talked about Oral Roberts, and then the 16 seed, Fairleigh Dickinson over Purdue a couple years, maybe the next season.
It was
that?
The next season, yeah. And then Purdue went to the title game.
That's right. Yeah,
we thought
they'd pull the old Virginia, lose to UMBC, and then win the title the next season. So yeah, there's a stretch there where it did seem like the 15 and 16s were really good and really competitive in these type of games.
Now, my favorite was the 2006 Gonzaga-UCLA. What do you remember from that game, aside from Adam Morrison sprawled out midcourt crying, which still chokes me up a little bit today?
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not sure it chokes you up as much.
No, I love Adam Morrison, though.
You do love him?
I'm an Adam Morrison guy. Back in the day, I had a shirt with just his face on it, and I thought it looked really cool.
That's great. So you are a Morrison guy.
Yeah, I'm a Morrison guy.
Good.
I'm a Gonzaga guy. Yeah, I mean, he cried before the game was over, which I always thought was a little weird. But yeah, the Gus Johnson call is amazing. The comeback was amazing. Darren Collison, Richard Mbamute with the game when he put back in there off the steal.
So I rewatched it today, the end of the game, and JP Batista, he lost him the game. I mean, that last sequence, he had a foul on a rebound that sent Ryan Hollins to the free throw line to make it a 1-point game. Then he's just casually holding the ball behind his head in the backcourt and made it for like the easiest strip. Like, honestly, it's not fair because I just got done watching the Boston College point shaving thing. But I'm like, dude, what is going through your mind? You have a wide open point guard to pass the ball to. He's literally wide open. and he didn't pass it to him. And he just held the ball behind his head with under 10 seconds left, made for an easy steal from, I think, Collison or Farmar, and then the go-ahead layup. And then he almost hits the game-winning bucket, but it was too little too late. It's just a sad, sad thing. And look, hey, you can't get through a Sweet 16 memory without, you know, the Beavers remembering what they did as well.
Thompson will step to the free throw line for one more. Thompson bends his knees. He shoots. That one is good. His 22nd point of the game. 2.2 left. Inbounds pass. The horn will sound, and it's over. From afterthought to elite, the Oregon State Beavers are going to the Elite Eight.
Incredible. That was from Westwood One. The Beavers were in the Elite Eight, ladies and gentlemen. Let's never forget it. In 2021, and Wayne Tinkle beating Loyola Chicago. And Wayne grew up on the campus of Loyola Chicago when his dad was one of the higher-ups there. So that was a special, special win for him. And the 12-seed Beavs tied with Houston at the under four to go to the Final Four. That literally happened. So enjoy the basketball, Steven. I'll talk to you again right here tomorrow. We'll have day two of the Sweet 16. And you can hear it coming up here on the flagship of the BFT Radio Network, 750 The Game, streaming for free at 750thegame.com. Coming up at the top of the hour from Westwood One. For Stephen Fawn, I'm Judah Newby. Talk to you tomorrow here on the Bald-Faced Truth.